Our scripture reading this evening will be from 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 22 through 26. 1 Samuel chapter 2, beginning in verse 22. Now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel, and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So he said to them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. Know, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him?" Nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father, because the Lord desired to kill them. And the child Samuel grew in stature and in favor both with the Lord and men.
We are continuing this evening to study in the series of what I've called mistakes. We notice in the context of this passage that we read about a man whose name was Eli. Eli was a very important man in the nation of Israel. He was a priest. We find that his sons, Hophni and Phinehas, likewise were appointed to be priests. But in spite of all the honor that was bestowed upon Eli, Eli had made some terrible mistakes. His mistakes were in the realm of rearing his children. If you'll turn with me to the Old Testament text of the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 6, we notice beginning in verse 4. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4. According to the law that was given through Moses, the text says, "Hear, O Israel, Jehovah our God is one Jehovah. And thou shalt love Jehovah thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be upon thy heart. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thy hand, and they shall be for frontlets between thine eyes. And thou shalt write them upon the doorpost of thy house and upon thy gates." Just in the reading of this text, we see that Moses, through the will of God, instructed the people to teach their children. Can you think of anything more important than teaching their children the things that God had done? And as we turn over to the book of Exodus, likewise we see that as the children of Israel were observing the Passover as they were about to come out of the land of Egypt. In Exodus chapter 12, as the Passover supper had been introduced, it tells us, beginning at verse 24, "And ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass, when ye are come into the land which Jehovah will give you, according as he hath promised, that ye shall keep this service. And it shall come to pass, when your children shall say unto you, What mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, It is the sacrifice of Jehovah's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people bowed the head and worshipped, and the children of Israel went and did so. As Jehovah had commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they." Again, we see that the observance of the Passover was to be a yearly feast. It was to provide an opportunity once again for parents to teach their children of the great things that God had done, of parents to teach their children of the occasion that brought them out of the land of Egypt. And as we turn further in our Bibles over to the book of Joshua, we note that Joshua was the military man who led the children into the land of promise. Joshua was a great man. After Moses died, he became the leader of these people. And in Joshua chapter 4, reading beginning at verse 19, it says, "And the people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and encamped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones," let's give a bit of background just here. Previous in this chapter, we notice that Joshua had led them through the wilderness period. He had brought her the land of Canaan. Moses had led them through the wilderness period. But Moses died on Mount Nebo, and Joshua took over the leadership of these people. And he has now led them to the land of Canaan. We find that they are to cross over the Jordan River and to enter into the land. Joshua has given them instructions that they are to pick up 12 stones, one for each tribe, and that they are to build a pillar of stones where they came into the promised land. And that's the text that we're reading. Beginning at verse 20, it says, "And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan did Joshua set up in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, When your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, What mean these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. For Jehovah your God dried up the waters of the Jordan from before you, until ye were passed over, as Jehovah your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were passed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of Jehovah, that it is mighty, and that ye may fear Jehovah your God forever." We see in the words that Moses and that Joshua left for the people to consider a certain reverence and respect for all the great things that God did. But as we turn in our Bibles over to the book of 1 Samuel, and there we begin reading in the third chapter, it tells us, beginning at verse 13, "For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons did bring a curse upon themselves, and he restrained them not." Eli was not a good father. Of all of the great things that he did in the nation of Israel, he did not teach his children. These were things that he knew that his children were doing. They were doing many things that were wrong, but we find that according to this text, he restrained them not. Now perhaps we need to identify ourselves with who Eli was. Eli was a great man. He was a descendant of Ithamar, the youngest son of Aaron. That tells us of his descent from Aaron, the high priest. He himself held the office of high priest, and he helped in the rearing of young Samuel in the tabernacle of God, in the temple, rather, of God. It says that he became a judge. Well, he became a judge at the year 58 years old. We know that because he was 98 when he died, and according to 1 Samuel chapter 4, we learn that he judged Israel for 40 years. Do the math, John. He was 58 years old when he became a judge of Israel. And we might also note that no doubt when he's first mentioned in the text, he was somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 years old. His children were born to him after he was an old man, as we see in 1 Samuel chapter 2 in verse 17. They're referred to as young men. Again, we might want to note, what was it that Eli did that was so bad? When we mention his name resounds with the fact that he did not restrain his sons. He did not teach his children. Now turn over, if you will, to 1 Samuel chapter 2 once again. Reading beginning at verse 12 of 1 Samuel chapter 2, it says, "Now the sons of Eli were base men. They knew not Jehovah. And the custom of the priests which the people was, that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servants came while the flesh was boiling with the flesh hook of three teeth in his hand. And he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, all that the flesh hook brought up the priest took therewith. So they did in Shiloh, unto all the Israelites that came thither. Yea, before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and gave to the man that sacrificed, Give flesh to roast, or said to the man that sacrificed, Give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have boiled flesh of thee, but raw." As we read on down through this context, we notice that these young men in verse 17, the sons of Eli, are described as men that committed sin, great sin. And the sin of the young men was very great before Jehovah, for the men despised the offering of Jehovah. Can you imagine the sons of such a great man as Eli, the high priest who was son or grandson to Aaron, the high priest? And now look at what they're doing. They despised the very offering that was given unto the Lord. In verse 22 of the text, "Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how that they lay with the women that did service at the door of the tent of meeting. And he said unto them, Why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all this peoples. It's interesting to me that Eli knew what they did. But as he approached them, he didn't approach them with any particular effort to correct them. There was no particular effort to chastise them. But rather he asked them, What it is that you're doing? Interestingly enough, God sent a man to the house of Eli to tell Eli, because his sons were so wicked and because he had not restrained his sons, what was going to happen to the house of Eli. In 1 Samuel, the second chapter, beginning at verse 27. 1 Samuel, the second chapter, beginning at verse 27. And there came a man of God to Eli and said unto him, Thus saith Jehovah, Did I reveal myself unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in bondage to Pharaoh's house? Now think about the occasion that God is citing. Did not I reveal myself to your house? That would be the house of Aaron, wouldn't it? As Aaron served as prophet to Moses and led the children of Israel out of the land of bondage. Now God is asking him, Did I not reveal myself to your house? And verse 28, And did I not choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up into mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? Did not I appoint the priesthood that includes you, Eli? And in verse 28 as it continues, And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Wasn't it that which they were to take from the offerings of the children of Israel that was to be served as sustenance to you and your house? And in verse 25, or 29, Wherefore, kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Now notice, Therefore Jehovah the God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now, Jehovah saith, Be it far from me, for them that honor me will I honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, and there shall not be an old man in thy house. You know what that means? If there would not be an old man in his house, then they'd all die young. None of them would ever reach the age of being an old man. It says, And thou shalt behold the affliction of my habitation, and all the wealth which God shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in thy house forever. Eli, you're going to see this. You'll know it. You'll be witness of it. There'll not be an old man in your house. Number 33. And the man of thine whom I shall cut off from mine altar shall be to consume thine eyes and to grieve thy heart. And all the increase of thy house shall die in the flower of their age. Again, they will die while they're young. Verse 34. And this shall be the sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons, upon Hophni and Phinehas. In one day they shall die, both of them. And I will raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in my heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house. And he shall walk before mine anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left in thy house shall come and bow down to him for a piece of silver and a loaf of bread, and shall say, Put me, I pray thee, into one of the priest's offices that I may eat a morsel of bread. Now look, Eli. You're a priest. You've been privileged to take of the sacrifices of the people. You've had the opportunity to eat the very best that they have, but the time will come when your house will not. In fact, those who might descend from you will beg even for a morsel of bread. Now, my friend, that sounds horrible, doesn't it? Eli is told, because you didn't do right by your sons, you didn't restrain them, you didn't teach them, then you'll be witness to the death of your sons, and they'll die young, and there won't be any of your descent, but what they also will die young. And why? Because you didn't do right. You didn't teach your children. If you'll notice the text once again, in 1 Samuel chapter 3. God told Samuel, and he understood exactly why this judgment would come. Again, verse 10. Jehovah came and stood and called as the other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel said, Speak, for thy servant heareth. The occasion of this was that Eli had for the most part raised Samuel and taught him what it means to serve God in this capacity. And now God says to Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, Speak, for thy servant heareth. And Jehovah said unto Samuel, Behold, I will do a thing in Israel, at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. Can you imagine hearing something so horrible it tingles your ears? God said, That's what I'm going to do. It'll be hard for folks to believe it, but that's what I'll do. God, what will you do? Well, he tells Samuel, verse 12, In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from the beginning even unto the end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew because his sons did bring a curse upon themselves and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be expiated with sacrifices nor offering forever. Now you know what he's telling Eli? This is what's going to happen. And Eli, there's not a thing you can do to change it. You can offer sacrifices, you can beg and plead, but it won't change it. Here's what I'm going to do. Now God told that to young Samuel. Now Samuel eventually approached Eli. And Eli told Samuel, Well, that's God speaking to you. And when he says that, when he says, Samuel, Samuel, you ask him or you tell him, Here am I. Verse 17, and he said, What is this thing that Jehovah has spoken unto thee? Samuel or Eli wants to know, What did God tell you? Now, can you imagine as a young man in Eli's house being trained, as it were, for your service unto God? Being asked by your mentor, What did God tell you? Can you imagine having this news to tell him? God told me. Here's what he will do. Now, Eli says at verse 17, I pray thee, hide it not from me. God do so to thee, and more also if thou hide anything from me, and all the things that he spake unto thee. And Samuel told him every whit. And hid nothing from him. And he said, It is Jehovah. Let him do what seemeth him good. Now Eli's messed up. He knows he's messed up. He knows that the judgment of God is right. And it breaks his heart. But he also knows there's not a thing that he can do now about it. Now those of us who have children, and those of us who have reared children, and those in the audience tonight who still have young children, I want you to listen to the story of Eli and note the blunders and mistakes that he made. Now Eli, you'll note, had children when he was an old man. He should have been wiser than what he was. But we find that there is a time to administer correction. Eli let that time pass. Again, you will notice in chapter 2, in verse 22, that Eli was very old, and he's heard of the things that his sons have been participating in. It would seem that his sons have participated in these sins, as you'll notice in verse 22, how that they lay with the women that did the service at the door of the tent of meeting. They've engaged in immorality when they're to be an example to the people, and Eli has heard about that and done absolutely nothing. You'll notice at verse 24, For my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make Jehovah's people to transgress. Eli's sons were to be an example to the people. Oh, they were an example, but not an example for good. They had led the people to do wrong things. Now it becomes evident, and we might raise the question just how. How did such sons ever become appointed as priests? Somebody's not watching, are they? Somebody's not paying attention, and in particular, Eli's not. Now we notice in the text that Eli was old. Now sometimes, When a man is old and he has children, the children then become the apple of his eye and they can do no wrong. Or perhaps Eli was just too gentle with them. He wanted to be a friend. Have you ever known folks that felt that way about their children? Now there's a time to be a companion to a child, but don't you ever forget you're the parent. Now my friend, if we allow that to go, be so easy that our children can do no wrong that we'll restrain them not, then we're making the same mistake that Eli made. He failed to reprove them until they had proceeded down the path of evil so far that there wasn't anything to be done about it. Now Eli is somewhat like David. The story of David in 1 Kings chapter 1, just in these two verses, becomes quite fascinating. 1 Kings chapter 1, reading in verses 5 and 6. David, in his old age, had a son. And David likewise expressed the same sentiment that we read concerning Eli. It says, "Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.' And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. And his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, 'Why hast thou done so?' And he was also a very goodly man, and he was born after Absalom." Now that helps us to see that David was old when Adonijah was born. But Adonijah, he wanted to be king, and he set forth men in front of him to make it look like he was somebody important, and his daddy never at one time displeased him by asking him, "Why have you done this?" He wouldn't challenge him. Now that's exactly the way that Eli was. He had sons in his old age and he didn't want to challenge them. He didn't want to rebuke them with any kind of sternness. Now I tell you what, sometimes parents have to be firm with children. Now would you grant me that? Sometimes parents may even have to be rather pointed with children and say, "No, you cannot do this. Now, whatever it takes, I will stand in your way. You won't do it." Now, that's being pointed, isn't it? Now, parents, have you ever said something akin to that when you talked with your children about something either they wanted to do or something they had done? Sometimes we have to be very pointed. And sometimes it has to be just rather extremely pointed. Sometimes we have to point out things that are very difficult. If you'll notice again in the text, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 23. How did Eli respond? He said unto them, "Why have you done such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all this people." Now you ever ask your children, "Why have you done this?" Or perhaps just to say, "What you did was wrong." Now it's interesting to me, and I've been guilty of this, and perhaps you have too, of asking a child, "Why did you do this?" Often the answer is, "I don't know why I did that." Well, now that hasn't really helped anything, has it? You haven't really resolved a thing when you say, "Well, why did you do that?" That's what Eli is doing. He hasn't restrained his sons and he's asking them why they did this. Now the obvious answer is, well, Eli hadn't taught them. Now there's the answer to it, but that's what he's asking them. Now he's heard about some things. Well, where was he when they were participating in these things? How is it he's just heard about these things? Did Eli recognize no responsibility of oversight of his children to know where they were and what they were doing? Now whether he did or not, he had that responsibility. And friend, whether you do or not, you have that responsibility. Now that's the responsibility that is given to parents. We might also note that his rebuke of these two boys really didn't emphasize just how serious sin is. Yes, he spoke of the consequences of the sin, but he didn't talk about what they did. Look, if you would, again at the text. Verse 22 of 1 Samuel chapter 2. Now Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how that they lay with the women that did service at the door of the tent of meeting. Do you read in any of this text where Eli rebuked them and told them what that they did and how wrong it was? No, he doesn't deal with that. He just talks about how that what they did led the people to transgress. Well, what about what they did and the responsibility of it? He seems more concerned about the reputation of his house than the evil that has been committed. Look again, verse 24. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make Jehovah's people to transgress. I'm not hearing good things. It's an insult to me. What will our reputation be? Well, now those are all good concerns. But when we set aside the sin that has committed for consideration of our reputation, something is wrong. Another thing we learn in this. His rebuke showed no particular determination to correct the sin. How do you correct a child who's done things that are wrong simply by asking him, why did you do it? Now that won't work, will it? Why did you do it? Well, that's not to rebuke the sin. He didn't threaten to judge them for their injustice toward men. But who was he? Eli was one of the judges, wasn't he? He had the responsibility to rebuke them, to judge them. But I want you to notice again in the text, he's willing to leave the ultimate judgment to God and not rebuke them for anything. Verse 25. If one man sin against another, God shall judge him. But if a man sin against Jehovah, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto his voice, or to the voice of their father, because Jehovah was minded to slay them. Now you see how God felt about it. But Eli was not willing to be harsh in his judgment at all against them. I'll just leave that one to God. Now sometimes I get asked questions, and perhaps you do too, about the practice of things that are obviously sinful, and folks say, well, you know, I don't want to judge anybody. We'll just leave that one to God. And often Matthew chapter 7 is the text that's cited. Do you ever hear that? Judge not that ye be not judged. So you see, we're not to make any kind of judgment, so whatever is being practiced by anyone, we'll just leave that to God. Now friend, that's not at all what that passage teaches. I want you to look at it. Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse 1. It's found in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. It says, judge not that ye be not judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured unto you. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that's in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me cast out the mote out of thine eye, and lo, the beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then thou shalt see clearly to cast out the mote out of thy brother's eye. You get the point? How can I rebuke you of doing something when I'm practicing the same thing? Have you heard the expression, clean up your own backyard first? That's what the Lord is telling these people. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, that'll be the standard by which you are judged. Now their judgment was hypocritical. That kind of judgment we're not to engage in. But while you're holding your finger there, if you would please, turn over to the Gospel of John, and let's notice in John chapter 7 and read verse 24. In John chapter 7, verse 24, the writer says, judge not according to appearance, but judge righteous judgment. Now, question, can we war one of these passages against another and conclude that Jesus said, don't make any judgment, but then he said to judge? Now, we've got to identify the kinds of judgment. We're not to make hypocritical judgment. We can't judge somebody else when we're practicing the same thing. But we are to make judgments that are righteous. Now my friend Eli was not willing to make even a righteous judgment. His sons were doing wrong things. And he said, well, I don't want to make any judgment. I'll just leave that to God. He'll decide that. No, God had already decided that. Laying with the women at the door of the tent of meeting is fornication. God had already made judgment about that. But Eli was afraid to execute it. Now his rebuke was really not followed by any kind of adequate chastisement. How many of you have said to your children, if you do that again, I'm going to spank you? and then they look right at you and do it again. Now, that won't work, will it? That won't work. Turn in your Bible, if you will, to the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 21. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, Moses had addressed this issue of disobedient children, those who are rebellious. And in Deuteronomy chapter 21, at verse 18, he said, "If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son that will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they chastise him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him and bring him out unto the elders of his city and unto the gate of his place, and they shall say unto the elders of his city, Our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard, and all the men of his city shall stone him to death with stones. So shalt thou put away the evil from the midst of thee, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Let me ask you a question. Was Eli obliged to obey this? Was this enjoined upon him? But you see, the problem here was these were his sons. Now he very candidly told them that what you're doing is not quite right, but I'll leave that to the Lord. But he didn't bring them out before the elders of the city and say, my sons are rebellious and they're gluttons and drunkards and they won't do right. Stone them to death. No, he wasn't willing to make that kind of judgment against them. Now, when Eli chose not to observe the law of God, it tells us, when they hearkened not unto the voice of their father, they wouldn't listen. Now, isn't that exactly what we're reading in Deuteronomy 18 or 21 verse 18? Here were sons that were rebellious that wouldn't listen. What was the law of God to the fathers? Take them out of the city. Tell the elders, and they'll stone them to death. Now, folks, I wonder how many rebellious sons they would have had if they'd practiced that. And you see, Eli wasn't willing to follow his instruction by any kind of discipline. Nor did he take any further steps to prevent them from continuing to practice the very thing that was wrong. He just observes that they're practicing it. Now, as a father, as a high priest, and as a judge, we want to notice that Eli had a very serious responsibility. In 1 Samuel chapter 3, beginning again at verse 12, it says, "In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from the beginning even to the end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons did bring a curse upon themselves and he restrained them not." I told Eli what would happen. Eli had a responsibility as a father. He had a responsibility as a priest and a judge to bring these children out and make them an example to the people, to stone them. That's what the law required, wasn't it? But because he wouldn't do that, God rejected him. Eli was guilty of rebellion. Another thing that Eli did, his rebuke of his sons really didn't result in any kind of improvement. Their contempt for the reproof that he gave unto them didn't really accomplish a thing with them. They're willing to just continue like they always had. Now, God had already given them up to destruction. We read that in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 25. But the wisdom writer likewise said, "He that hateth reproof shall die." Wasn't that his sons? They didn't want to listen. And Eli really didn't want to tell them. Now, sometimes we might notice, even at a very early age, the attitude of rebellion. I have on the board that it's hard to move a grown tree. If you want to bend a small twig and teach it to grow a certain way, or if you want to transplant a small tree, often you can be successful in doing that. But you ever try to move a great big tree? You can't hardly move a great big tree and expect it to live. In Proverbs chapter 19, reading at verse 18, your Bible and mine says, "Chasten thy son, seeing there is hope, and set not thy heart on his destruction." There is a time to teach a young person. And when that time passes, and you've not taught them,
then the time is gone and you can't put it back on the calendar. Now, when they grow up and mature to become evil men, it's hard at that point to try to reverse what you fail to do at home. Now, my friends, some children, by the way, can be discouraged. Sometimes some parents are just, in fact, too strict. They discipline harshly and not with love. In Colossians chapter 3, as Paul writes concerning the discipline of children, he says at verse 21, he says, "Fathers, provoke not your children, that they be not discouraged." Now that doesn't mean don't spank them. But what it does mean is you spank them with love when it's necessary. You help them to understand. You know, sometimes we think that the way to treat our children and to have a good relationship, as it were, with our children is bestow all kinds of things upon our children, as we say, we didn't have when we grew up. And so we want to bestow all kinds of indulgence upon our children. You know what? Money can't buy love. And it can't buy reverence and respect. You can't buy that with becoming, as it were, Donna and I call it, the Disneyland dad or the Disneyland mom. That won't work. Further mistake that we read about Eli. Sometimes in our discipline of our children, we have to be real plain. If you'll turn back over to 2 Samuel chapter 12, we read about David. You recall this. We've talked about David recently. But you'll notice in the 11th chapter, the relationship that David had had with Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, all he had. And David took him from Uriah and had orders given that Uriah should be killed. Now you recall that when Nathan the prophet came to David, he presented to him a story. He said, "David, there was a very poor man, and there was a very rich man. The very poor man had only one little ewe sheep that was to him like a daughter. He loved it, and it ate at his own table. The rich man had many herds and flocks, but the rich man had a visitor to come and see him. And rather than to take one of his many flocks or herds, he went over to the poor man's house and took that poor man's one little ewe lamb and killed it for his guest." How would you feel about that? David became angry. And he said, "A man that has done that's worthy to die." And then the pointed words of Nathan, "Thou art the man." That's what you did. You did that. And sometimes we don't get the point until somebody marks it down real plain and says, "Right here's what you did. You did this." Eli was not willing to confront his sons on that plane and to make it pointed what they had committed against God. Now, friend, if we're going to rebuke anybody, even those of our family, we must communicate to them how awful sin is. And sometimes that's not an easy thing to do. To help them to see everything they need to see, to stop doing what they're doing. Now, again, that's not an easy thing to do. You meet opposition. Confrontation. That's not always easy. Fathers who love their children are instructed to chastise them. Can't we learn that from the errors of Eli? In the book of Hebrews, in the 12th chapter, reading beginning at verse 6. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 6. A fascinating passage regarding parenthood and our relationship even to God. It says in Hebrews 12, beginning at verse 6, "For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth. For it is for chastening that ye endure. God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father chasteneth not? But if ye are without chastening, whereof all have been made partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we had the fathers of our flesh to chasten us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chasten us as it seemed good to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. All chastening seemeth for the present to be not joyous but grievous, yet afterward it yieldeth peaceable fruit unto them that have been exercised thereby." Now let's pause right there. Young people, mama or daddy ever get after you and tell you, "You can't do this, I won't let you go somewhere because you've done something that's wrong and here are the consequences." Mama and daddy ever get after you and literally spank you pretty hard because you did something you shouldn't have done. And you know that what you did was wrong. But here are the consequences. Now, it's a hard thing when mama or daddy says, "This is going to hurt me worse than it does you," to consider that at the moment. But you know, as a parent, it does. But as a parent, it has to be done. Sometimes we think that God doesn't chasten us. Sometimes there are things in our lives that occur that are not pleasant. We might think of the providence of God. I'll tell you, I don't understand all I know about the providence of God. But I understand this, that sometimes things happen that help us to learn some lessons that we would not learn if those things had not happened. Case in point. When the children of Israel came to the city of Jericho and they were so victorious over the conquering of that city, they thought this is a great thing. And then when they came to the next city, the city of Ai, they were badly defeated. Let me ask you, beloved, where did they learn the greatest lesson? Was it in their victory or was it in their defeat? Now you see that, don't you? They didn't learn the greatest lesson when they conquered the city of Jericho. They learned that they could not live independent of God when they were defeated by those of the city of Ai. Now, sometimes, folks, we learn the most valuable lessons in defeat than we learn when we're on the mountaintops of victory. Now, parents, fathers are in the position to restrain their children's sinful behavior. We have a responsibility to do that. You can read that in your Bible, in the book of Ephesians, in the 6th chapter. You'll see it. Fathers, bring up your children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, as we see in the King James translation of that. Now, friend, whether it be in the home, whether it be in the school, whether it be in the church, or whether it be in the community, you must understand that it's not the responsibility of others to rear your children. Now, that's a hard lesson. Sometimes we think that there are all kinds of programs hooked to the school to help our children and to raise them for us. Sometimes we expect the church to do the same thing, to teach our children how to behave and to educate them in the things that are right and to correct them when they're wrong. No, sir. The church has a responsibility to teach, but the primary responsibility that you can read in the Scriptures in Ephesians chapter 6 is bestowed upon fathers. Now, that's a responsibility of the home. Don't you ever forget it. Now, Eli didn't learn that. You can. We might also note that if we wait too long, it may be too late. Rebuke your child. Chastise him. While there is hope, there may become a time when there is no hope. It's possible for one to become hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. The Hebrews were warned about that. And in the Hebrew letter in the 6th chapter, those Hebrews were reminded that it is possible for them to go so far that no one can bring them back. It's going to be dependent upon them to change their mind. Now, friend, that's a serious point. Can you learn that from Eli? Wouldn't it be a lot better just to receive the correction? To have somebody that loves you enough to point out the things that you're doing that are sinful and receive the correction rather than to proceed to a point when it's really too late. Again, Proverbs chapter 1 at verse 23. The writer says, "Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you. I will make known my words unto you. Turn at my reproof." Some won't listen. How sad that Eli could accept reproof, but he had a hard time giving it. Again, in Proverbs chapter 13, verse 25, the writer says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes." Now, my friend, as we think about Eli, reproof is a solemn obligation. It should be given in an effective manner. When not so given, it can do more harm than good. In fact, it can be devastating. Reproof should be humbly and obediently received, as Eli received it. He accepted the Lord's judgment upon him. And indeed, those very things happened. You'll notice in 2 or 1 Samuel, in the 4th chapter, that when they engaged in war with the Philistines, Hophni and Phinehas, verse 11, were both slain the same day. The ark of God was taken. Eli was so disturbed by this at the ripe old age of 98 years old, verse 15, that he fell backwards and broke his neck, verse 18. Hophni, Phinehas, Eli, all died because Eli restrained not his sons. Now friend, that's the lesson tonight. Very simple lesson. Eli had a responsibility to his sons that he didn't observe. Let us learn the lesson. Perhaps I'm talking to someone who would desire to obey the gospel. Become a Christian this evening. You can do that. Believing that Jesus is the Christ, would you turn from your sin, confess your faith, and humbly be baptized into Christ? If you've not done that, you need to do that now. If you have done that and you've not lived as you know you must, you need to repent of it and ask God's forgiveness. If you be subject to the Lord's invitation, make it known, would you please, right now, while together we stand and sing this song.